Picture this, if you will. You're a pediatric hospitalist about to see a 3-year-old boy recently downgraded from the intensive care unit where he was admitted for heat stroke. You review the chart and stop short when you see Christ-Siemens-Tourette syndrome listed in the medical history. You realize, with a bit of embarrassment, that you have literally no idea what that means. But you're running behind on your list of patients, so you enter the room and see a 3-year-old male who is not ill-appearing, but has sparse hair and malformed teeth that you assume are related to his disorder. After evaluating the patient, you ask his mother about his condition obliquely, trying not to give away how little you know. "They tell me there was a problem during an early stage of his development when I was pregnant," she says. "Like, really early? Around the 3rd week? What process in embryologic development could have led to the patient's condition? And does it affect management of your patient's admitting diagnosis of heat stroke?" And welcome to Audio Bricks. I'm Arjun Iyer, here to bring reproductive biology from our bricks to your ears. But first, a quick shout out to the learning platform that makes Audio Bricks possible, the RX Bricks, which is the source of all the content you hear on this podcast. And if you've been holding off on checking this out, well, now we're running a promotion where you can get a full RX Bricks subscription for 50% off using the code RXPOD. That's RX Pod, you know, like the RX podcast. The link to the bricks is in the show notes, along with the code if you forgot how to spell it already. After completing today's episode, you'll be able to 1. Define the term gastrulation, when it occurs, and describe the process of forming the 3 germ layers. 2. Describe the development and fates of ectoderm derivatives, including surface ectoderm, neural tube, and neural crest. And 3. Describe the development and fates of the mesoderm and endoderm. Part 1. What is gastrulation? Most complex things are built from just a few basic ingredients. Think of a birthday cake, which is composed of flour, sugar, butter, and eggs. Or a house, which is built from concrete, drywall, wood, and bricks. Well, it's the same with the human body. Believe it or not, the embryonic building blocks for the entire body come from just 3 layers of cells. And these germ layers are the ectoderm, mesoderm, and endoderm. Let's see how these are formed and how they build the human body. So, gastrulation is a major milestone in development, and this is the process of forming the gastrula, or the 3-layered embryo composed of ectoderm, mesoderm, and endoderm. These germ layers, as they're called, are the building blocks for forming the entire body. Gastrulation takes place during the 3rd week of embryonic development. Pretty easy to remember, right? Week 3 equals 3 layers. But before we get into the nitty-gritty of gastrulation, let's back up and review what happens during week 2 of development that sets the stage for this important process. Okay, so during week 2 of development, the embryo has been fertilized and is busy with implantation into the endometrium. At this point, the embryo is a bilaminar or 2-layered disc. Remember, week 2 equals 2 layers. And these 2 layers are called the epiblast and the hypoblast. How are these components developing visually? Well, the position of the epiblast is dorsal to the hypoblast and ventral to the amniotic cavity. So, late in week 2, a thickening with a dorsal groove down the center of the epiblast appears. This groove is known as the primitive streak. The cranial end of the primitive streak forms the primitive node, which acts as the organizer of gastrulation and other embryonic events through the release of signaling molecules. Additionally, the primitive streak itself is the source of cells that are involved in gastrulation. But before we dive into the embryonic layer derivatives, let's see if you remember what you just learned. Which structure is the organizer of gastrulation? The answer is the primitive node. Now on to the main event, week 3. During gastrulation, the primitive streak epiblast cells undergo mitosis, and the new cells migrate ventrally between the epiblast and the hypoblast. These form 2 new layers, the mesoderm, which becomes the middle layer, and the endoderm, which replaces the hypoblast. The hypoblast actually regresses. It doesn't form any embryonic structures. But a portion of the dorsalmost epiblast remains, and that is renamed the ectoderm. Now, since the events of week 3 are so important, I want to pause here and summarize the origins of the 3 layers that result from gastrulation. After all, these layers do go on to make the entire human body. First, the ectoderm is composed of the remaining epiblast cells that do not migrate. Second, the mesoderm is composed of the epiblast cells that migrate and end up sandwiched between the overlying ectoderm and the underlying endoderm. Finally, the endoderm is composed of the epiblast cells that migrate and completely displace the hypoblast. Again, these three layers are the ingredients for forming all of the body's structures. Once they're present, organogenesis can begin. Pro tip, you will need to know the specific derivatives of each of these three germ layers, and we'll get to those shortly. First, though, we'll set the stage for learning the derivatives by taking a quick look ahead to week 4, where each germ layer makes important changes. The key event that takes place during week 4 is the folding of the layers. During week 4, the flat, three-layered embryo folds over onto itself to create the more or less tubular fetus. The dorsal portion of the embryo wraps around the entire ventral portion, folding around itself like a little fetus burrito. The ventralmost germ layer, the endoderm, forms a tube that's open on the ventral side. Meanwhile, the dorsalmost germ layer, the ectoderm, wraps all the way around the entire fetus, not only laterally, but also craniocaudally, until it pinches that ventral opening in the endoderm down to a single point. And that point, my friends, is called the umbilical ring. It's only during week 4 that you can really see why the layers are called endoderm and ectoderm, and not just ventral derm and dorsal derm. During week 4, the ectoderm goes from being purely dorsal to wrapping entirely around the outside of the endoderm. Now, with that image in mind, let's get back to exploring each of those three germ layers from dorsal to ventral, and see how this all ties together. You'll discover that each germ layer gives rise to quite a variety of structures. Part 2. How does the ectoderm further develop? So let's start off with the ectoderm. As we mentioned before, the ectoderm transforms from being a flat dorsal layer to one that surrounds the entire trunk in week 4 of embryogenesis. The ectoderm differentiates to form a variety of structures, most notably the nervous system and skin. But not the entire skin, only the epidermis, sweat glands, hair follicles, and nails. And elephant in the room, isn't it kind of weird that our nervous system derives from the same layer as the skin? True story. The early nervous system forms by a process called neurulation. Late in week 3, the midline ectoderm thickens and invaginates to form the neural tube, which runs along the dorsal aspect of the fetus deep to the surface ectoderm. This neural tube forms the central nervous system, primarily the brain and spinal cord, but not before clusters of cells called neural crest cells migrate away from the neural tube to both sides. These neural crest cells primarily form the peripheral and enteric nervous systems. So that's a lot of information so far, so let's stop for a quick review. What are the two main derivatives of ectoderm? The skin and nervous system are the two most important ectoderm derivatives. But to be fair, the ectoderm does give rise to a whole bunch of other derivatives not easily captured in the skin-nervous system paradigm. Unfortunately, we'd be here all day if I had to list them for you, but I'll just summarize the most important, unusual ectoderm derivatives. The surface ectoderm gives rise to not only the sweat glands, but also the mammary and parotid glands. It also has a lot more structural importance in the face, where ectodermal cells form the basis of the teeth, facial cartilage, and the lens of the eye. And neural crest cells give rise to not only the peripheral and enteric nerves, but also the Schwann cells that myelinate them, the neuroendocrine adrenal medulla, and the melanocytes of the skin. Part 3. How does the mesoderm further develop? Moving on to the next gastrulation layer now, the mesoderm. The mesoderm forms a variety of tissues, including all muscle and blood cells, the dermal layer of the skin, and most cartilage, bone, and connective tissue. It also forms the notochord, a midline embryonic structure that forms the dura mater and nucleus pulposus in the intervertebral discs. Now, that's a lot of stuff. And in order for the mesoderm to differentiate and form such a wide variety of structures, the original mesoderm layer subdivides into paraxial, intermediate, and lateral segments. Specifically, the paraxial, or next to the axis, mesoderm is the medial division, and it differentiates to form the central or axial skeleton, as well as all the muscles of the body. The intermediate mesoderm lies between the paraxial and lateral mesoderm, and it gives rise to the urogenital system, the gonads, and the cortical portion of the adrenal gland. The lateral mesoderm is, obviously, the lateralmost division, and it subdivides into a ventral splanchnic layer and a dorsal somatic layer, with a cavity separating the two layers known as the coelom. And for those of you who have no idea what I'm talking about, it's the same terminology as the nervous system. Splanchnic refers to the organs, and somatic refers to external things like muscle and bone. Logically, then, the splanchnic layer differentiates to form the cardiovascular system and the smooth muscle of hollow organs. The somatic layer, meanwhile, gives rise to the bones of the limbs and, weirdly enough, the sternum, which you'd think would be a part of the axial skeleton, but, well, embryos are weird, that's all I have to say. Alright, pop quiz time. Into what two layers does the lateral mesoderm subdivide, and what separates the two? The lateral mesoderm subdivides into a ventral splanchnic layer and a dorsal somatic layer, with a coelom separating the two. Part 4. How does the endoderm further develop? Now onto the ventralmost layer, the endoderm. Now, in general, the endoderm is a lot simpler than the mesoderm. Its main derivatives are the linings of the gastrointestinal and respiratory tracts. But the endoderm also differentiates to line the solid organs that open out into the GI tract, including the gallbladder, liver, and pancreas. Some other weird things that you might not expect to be endodermal in origin. First, while the kidneys and ureters are derived from mesoderm, it's the endoderm that forms the lower urinary tract, namely the urinary bladder and urethra. The closely associated prostate gland and lower vagina are also derived from endoderm. Second, while the parotid glands are derived from ectoderm, the submandibular and sublingual glands are derived from endoderm. Finally, the endoderm also gives rise to two endocrine glands, the thymus and the follicular cells of the thyroid. And that's a wrap. Let's see if we've completed our goals for today's episode. First, can you define gastrulation and when it occurs? Gastrulation occurs during week 3 and is a developmental process that creates a three-layered embryonic disc composed of ectoderm, mesoderm, and endoderm. Immediately before that, during week 2, the primitive streak forms the primitive node, which acts as the organizer of gastrulation. Week 4 involves folding of the three-layered embryo so that the ectoderm wraps all the way around the growing fetus. Second, can you describe the development and derivatives of ectoderm? The ectoderm primarily gives rise to two organ systems, the skin and the nervous system. The midline ectoderm forms the neural tube and neural crest cells. The neural tube forms the central nervous system, and the neural crest cells migrate away from the neural tube to primarily form the peripheral and enteric nervous systems. Next, can you describe the development and fates of mesoderm? The mesoderm forms the notochord, all muscle and blood cells, and most connective tissue, dermis, bone, and cartilage. The mesoderm subdivides into paraxial, intermediate, and lateral segments. Paraxial mesoderm gives rise to the somites, which form the body segments, meaning the muscles and the axial skeleton. The intermediate mesoderm forms primarily the upper urogenital structures. The lateral mesoderm further divides into a splanchnic layer, which gives rise to the cardiovascular system and the smoothened cardiac muscle, and a somatic layer, which gives rise to the dermis, limb bones, and sternum. Finally, can you describe the development and fates of endoderm? Endoderm primarily forms the linings of the GI and respiratory tracts. The endoderm also gives rise to several glands, including the liver and pancreas, as well as the submandibular and sublingual glands. Finally, the endoderm also provides the basis of a couple of endocrine organs, namely the thymus and the follicular cells of the thyroid gland. Now, armed with your newfound knowledge, let's revisit our patient from the beginning of the episode. You're rounding on a 3-year-old boy originally admitted for heat stroke who has a history of Christ-Siemens-Tourette syndrome, a disorder of embryogenesis that his mother believes occurred during the third week of development. Based on his physical appearance of a flattened nose, sparse hair, and dental abnormalities, what stage of embryogenesis do you predict was disrupted? And how do you think this might have contributed to his heat stroke? Assuming that the developmental disorder occurred during the third week of fetal development, and based on the facial hair and dental changes, Your reason that Christ-Siemens Tourette syndrome is a disorder of the development of the ectoderm. You excuse yourself, telling the patient's mother that you need to review some of the lab results again. And while you're at it, you take the opportunity to read a little bit more about the disorder. Sure enough, the disorder is also known as hypohidrotic ectodermal dysplasia, which not only confirms your hypothesis, but also suggests what led to the patient's heat stroke, the inability to sweat due to dysfunction of the sweat glands that are also derived from ectoderm. But his physical exam, labs, and vital signs are within normal limits, and it appears that the worst of his illness has passed. You discharge the patient, providing instructions for continued supportive care at home and anticipatory guidance for how to avoid overheating in the summer months, given his inability to sweat normally. As you leave the room, you remind yourself that you probably should have done your reading before going into the patient's room. After all, no physician knows everything, but we're all responsible for continuing our own journey of lifelong learning to provide the best care for our patients. And that's our show. Make sure to like and subscribe on Apple Podcasts if you like what you heard. Remember, your feedback helps us improve. And again, now's your chance to get 50% off the RX Bricks by following the link in the show notes below and typing in the promo code RXPOD, like RX Podcast. It's a huge discount on the written material that serves as the foundation of Audio Bricks, complete with illustrations, questions, flashcards, and active learning. So go check that out if you haven't already, and help us keep Audio Bricks free. Until next time, friends.